Yeah. Five killers arise from graves. The within, they shed the dead weight of morals and sins. Set loose by Zeus, declare space time, and lead the murderous horde known as Experience Grind.
Welcome, everybody, to the Experience Grind podcast, a show about getting older and the experiences that we've learned along the way through TV, games, movies, TV shows, if I haven't said that already. And let's just say life experiences in general. My name is Sean. If you haven't already figured that out, I am the host this week. And joining me is my good buddy that taught me the art of levitating, Brian.
Yeah, I am. I'm very excited for the future adaptation of Danny, the Champion of the World. It's actually a Roald Dahl book that I don't know anything about, but I like the title.
You hipster.
I don't know anything about that either, but it's not going to stop me from looking into it. With Brian, I have my good buddy who taught me how to boof a jellyfish without myself looking like an octopus, Kyle.
Hi.
Hey, how are you doing, bud?
Pretty boofing good, I guess.
I don't know if people know this, but the game Octodad is actually about Kyle.
Oh, nobody suspects. That's a compliment. Because I am, you know, I have a whole secret family that everybody knows about.
That's everybody does. And with Kyle, I have my friend that taught me how to do lines of wasabi without gagging. Ryan, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. The best way to do wasabi is through meditation. And when I close my eyes to meditate, the picture I use to find absolute zen is Benedict Cumberbatch on all fours in his mocap suit for Smog, Walking around, making those faces.
Oh, yeah.
That's how I...
That's your happy Henry place. Sugar. That's your point of zen.
That's my happy place. That's my point of zen. Ugh. It's that or Tommy Wiseau.
I feel like I got off easy in the intros there.
Yeah, it really started off as really related to this movie, and then I had to spiral out of control.
Took a hard left
and
turn.
And then pull it back in. By the time I got to Ryan, I pulled it back in, like those tentacles in my butt. If you listeners haven't watched the movie that we're going to be talking about today, you should pause, just stop, go watch that, come back. It's 40 minutes on Netflix.
It's a short film. Wonderful
story.
Super reasonable.
Sugar. It is the most reasonable thing that I've ever had to watch for this show. Took no time at all. And boys, let me tell you something. I reached out to you guys about a month ago and gave you a heads up that this was going to be my next pick. It was shortly after my last pick. And that was because I was listening to a video or a podcast or something that really piqued my interest. It's like, oh, I had never heard about it before. I've never seen this book. I've never read this book, obviously. But I heard Benedict Cumberbatch. I heard magic. I feel like it was possibly AI generated because I think Magician was in there at some point. And so I thought that this was going to be a movie about magic and a magician or a Houdini kind of thing. And it was not. Had you guys heard of this book prior or had seen The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar prior?
I had no idea what I was getting into at all.
I never heard of it. I've never read the Roald Dahl book either. But as soon as it started up and I saw it was Wes Anderson, I was all on board. I was...
Wow. Wow. So, because Kyle, you are a Wes Anderson fan. I know Brian is not.
Well,
you didn't even know this was a Wes Anderson
fan. I don't even
thing.
Really know much about Wes Anderson because for some reason he's a blind spot in my...
Oh, okay, film. So blind spot. I thought you actively was like, no, this is not my thing.
No, when no, I was never like that. We previously discussed it in another episode that I just have not seen. I think the only movie I've seen by him before this was Rushmore, which is barely a Wes Anderson style movie.
when I was
read. Okay, I'm glad we clarified that, because I was going into this episode thinking you were not a Wes Anderson fan. I was really curious as to how what you thought of this.
I'm watching it. I was like, this is going to open up two doors. It's going to open up the Wes Anderson door, which I'm all aboard. But yeah, Ryan, yeah. I did not know this existed. I'm putting it on, number one, Netflix. And number two, I don't really just seek out shit. So like this wasn't in my radar that there's three other shorts that he also did based on Roald Dahl books that I'm going to watch now because they're on there. But the other door that I knew this would open is the short film one. And now I'm like, well, how long till Ryan brings the string things about the Johnsons to us?
Man, I can't because it's too much.
But it's a lot.
It'll break people. But back on Henry Sugar, this is one I was anticipating because I do follow Wes Anderson. And anytime he has anything in development, I'm just so eager for it, whatever it is. Even the ones that don't hit, I find interesting at the very least. So they're worth watching. And I think I remember when this came out, it was like November or December of whatever year it was released, and immediately like jumped up above like so many other movies in the year for like one of my favorites that year. I love this. I love all the other shorts that are attached to it. The other ones are like 17 minutes a piece. So like watch them. They're quick. They're really good too. But for this one I love, and as soon as you brought this, dark. I was like, yes. Yeah. Well, he did Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Like that, there's darkness to his stuff. There's whimsy, but great. Darkness and a realism.
Because
there's
treats kids like adults, or like, you know, that they're more mature than what most people do. Like, oh, look at the funny blue dog. Roald Dahl's like, credit. Hey, the world's scary, man. be ready.
You could have been referencing so many different things with the funny blue dog.
I know, right?
This ended and the swan followed it
up. Oh, it wasn't Bluey, by the way.
Like right after this. And like Ryan said, they're very quick. But by the end of it, I was like, holy shit. This is dark as fuck, man.
The swan broke me. Dude. The swan is so rough.
Yeah, it is. I was like listening to that at work while I was doing prep work. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? Like, I couldn't really watch it at the same time. But just like listening to it. So absolutely fucked. But yeah, as you guys referenced, so this came out in a batch-ish of four short stories directed by Wes Anderson. And I believe this was the first one. This one came out at the end of 2023. And by the end of it, you can go onto Netflix and just watch all four of them in a row. It's, you know, one clickable thing. It's actually The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar and Three Others is the title of it. Or you can watch them individually. And I don't want to get too much into this, but I am curious because we are talking about Wes Anderson and stuff. Ryan, on a scale of like one Wes Anderson to like 10 Wes Andersons, how Wes Anderson is this movie?
I think this is a full 10. Oh, maybe if you want to throw in that extra like 1 point, it's an 11. Yeah. This is the most Wes Anderson, and I think it uses Wes Anderson to like his fullest abilities, mm-hmm. and in the best way, because he's already kind of like, he presents stilted, unrealistic, unnatural dialogue at times, perfect for when you're reading the written word and presenting like the stage like thing. It like it's just a perfect marriage.
I can't wait to get there.
It's interesting.
So the reason why I asked you that,
I'll bite my tongue,
is if listeners, if you have gotten to this point and you haven't paused and you haven't watched this and you like Wes Anderson, Ryan just gave it 11 out of 10 Wes Andersons for how Wes Anderson-y this is. Mm-hmm. And if that is up your alley, pause. Seriously, go watch this. 40 minutes. We'll see you in 40 minutes. But guys, I'm going to give everybody a quick breakdown of this movie before we get into the meat and taters of the show. So, in The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar, we are greeted by Roald Dahl, who sat down to tell us the story of Henry Sugar, with beautiful theatrical set transitions throughout, which I'm undoubtedly sure that we'll eventually get there. We are introduced to Henry Sugar. Henry is 41 years old, 6'1", married man who inherited a great deal of wealth and has never had to work a day in his life.
I also like that they described him as not very pretty, which was a subtle dig to Benedict Cumberbatch.
He thought he was much more attractive than
he
was.
That was. I was like, that's a good little dig. I like that.
Full of great lines. No sooner are we introduced to Sugar than does he find the book, The Study of Imdad Khan. Normally a man for detective books and thrillers, something about this book captivated him. Jump to Calcutta, 1935. Imdad Khan, the man who can see without his eyes. And as fate would have it, he surely was able to. Written verbatim by Dr. Zizi Chatterjee after interviewing him, we learn about how Imdad was able to, after years and years, harness a meditative technique taught to him by the great yogi to be about to see without his eyes. Now, the great yogi was known for his levitating abilities, so perhaps this was a happy accident for Imdad. Like most wealthy folks, Henry was not satisfied with the riches that he had and aspired to grow them, and his preferred method was with gambling. And how could he lose if he could see through the cards? He couldn't. Day by day, hour by hour, Henry dedicated himself until a little more than 3 years had gone by, and he was able to easily take home money from the Lord's House Casino. But there was a problem. With great power comes great
boredom.
Yeah, I was going to say boredom.
Henry could see inside himself and see the clot that was going to end his life. Where was the fun in making all of this money, he wondered. In the emptiness of it, he threw all of his money into the streets below, prompting a policeman to chastise him for inciting a riot. Ashamed, Henry dedicated the rest of his life to conning casinos and using his winnings to establish children's hospitals and orphanages around the world. A real-life Robin Hood. At age 63, Henry sadly passed away from the pulmonary embolism that he had seen many years earlier. And like Dr. Chatterjee before, Roald Dahl was tasked with telling us Henry Sugar's story.
With the names changed to protect the innocent, obviously.
And that leads us here, where we're telling the story that Roald told us. So we're telling Dahl's story at this
point. We're retelling Wes Anderson telling us a story about Roald Dahl telling us a story about Henry Sugar reading a story about Dr. Chatterjee writing a story about Imdad Khan telling a story.
So if this was Inception, would my top be spinning? Is that...
It's hard to tell. Can I give a TLDR version of the synopsis?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Benedict Cumberbatch develops X-ray vision through yoga to cheat at blackjack.
God damn it. It's really good.
Yeah. But then, in true Twilight Zone fashion, as soon as he gets everything he wants, it means nothing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Which is the beauty of it all.
That's how I was going to say you can tell this is fiction, because the millionaire gives his money away to do good, which is never going
to
happen.
We're
ever.
All waiting on somebody to have the Henry
fucking
Sugar
scumbags.
Moment.
Well, that would be the perfect ending for fiction, but this is not fiction. This is fact, and the only fiction in this is the name Henry Sugar, and Henry Sugar's name is to be protected. It is fact.
No, but it no is millionaire's fact. Ever given away his money.
So it's fiction. Okay. One would say that it wasn't his money. He kept his money. He gave away the casino's money. Or is it because he won the money? Is it then his and then he's given it away?
I think so, yeah.
Damn.
The real lesson here is gambling's no fun when you know you're going to win.
Well, that's definitely
is that
part
the lesson?
Of it. There's no thrill. It's like let's play roulette without a gun. What's the fun?
I mean, that's just roulette.
You know that common saying?
Well, I guess it depends. If you have a peanut allergy and you had 6 almonds and took away one and put one peanut in there,
I'm
that,
interested in that roulette.
Is that roulette without a gun? That's sounds pretty terrifying.
I don't watch dog fighting because I want him to play poker, you know?
But then the loser.
Is that how Michael Vick got right? in trouble? I don't think so, right?
I'm more into electrifying those cards.
He got in trouble. His dog fighting was he was putting on boxing gloves and assaulting the dogs, which is a form of bestiality, which is illegal. Just
Wait,
two
say
dogs
that again.
Fighting, Who is that's this? Fine.
What huh? kind Michael of gloves Vick? Are we talking about?
Boxing. I got all
was
the answers.
A form of bestiality?
He punched dogs? Like he was in the fight?
He just hosted a dog fighting ring and got him. Oh, like, okay. I'm just yes anding something much more ridiculous.
I really thought that was the truth. And no. You guys need to be careful with what you're
I'm
saying because.
Like, I'm pretty sure, like, he did some fucked up stuff, like, when the dogs lost
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, they tortured
like,
dogs.
He was
an absolute asshole monster. Yeah,
like,
and
electrocuted
the
them.
To
and...
also do it. Oh, yeah. Oh,
but yeah. Wasn't fisting dogs with boxing gloves, I don't think.
No. Well,
he wasn't wearing dogs
just to
like
be clear,
Kermit.
I thought he was in the ring actually fighting. It was a dog.
Yeah, that's what I was implying. And then I said it was a variation of bestiality under the blue laws. And then that's what he got busted
technically,
for.
Technically, back in the day, finding a dog and fucking a dog were the same thing.
They were actually the same thing. Yeah, you could be charged just as harshly.
It was really weird.
String him up, boys. He was fucking
gloves.
That dog.
Either way you look at it, it's animal abuse.
Now, what if the dog won? Like, does it? Is the dog in charge?
Well, then Michael Vick assumes the position.
I was going to say Michael Vick is a bitch, which he was anyway.
Yeah, then we'd all be saying that dog's name.
Yeah, the dog
not
would
Michael
be a hero.
Vick.
Oh my god!
And have a
we
statue
going...
like Balto. We are off the rails. I'm
this
sorry.
Is, we are
yeah,
so
you're
100%. Off the rails. I did not realize that Balto had a statue in Central Park until I saw the statue of Balto in Central Park. Man. I'm like, why is there a fucking statue of Balto?
Because Balto.
And then
moves.
I felt really dumb. Anyways,
Balto's the,
boys.
That movie. Yeah.
I'm used to in my shows just kind of rambling and just free balling and stuff, but. I'm not going to lie. I thought this was going to be about magic, and I was going to turn
you
this
did.
Into a show about how magic influenced our lives, and I don't feel like I can do that this episode. So I stole... This time, I actually stole Brian's thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to be fair, I developed it for this show, so...
Okay. So I'm using an adjusted kick-assometer here. Just kidding. Going back to the most recent show that Brian had done, he cool whittled down his categories into five different categories, which we're each going to assign 5 points to. And then it's an added total to get a total at the end of the episode for this show. And the five categories are characters, story, style, entertainment value, and direction. But guys, prior to even getting into that, I asked each of you to grab a piece of paper. Prior to the show, I asked you all to have a piece of paper. And the reason why I did that is I want you guys to, right now, from the hip, if you were to give this movie a numerical rating from 0 to 100, I want you to secretly do that right now. And after we finish tallying all of these scores for all of these categories, I want to see where everybody's score for this movie lines up with the score that we're going to collectively give this movie. I think it's, I love Ryan just miming in the most gigantic of ways that nobody can see but us. That popped me. Is big zero? Oh no. I fucked up.
No. Oh, no, it's man. Not a zero.
There's a one in front of it. All right. Is everybody does everybody have their answers or their numbers or whatever locked in? Are we good to go?
Sure do.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Sure do.
To start this off, guys, we have the category of characters. This is going to cover casting, antagonist, protagonist, all of those things that Brian previously had separate. It's going to encapsulate all of those. And I would love to open this up for discussion, starting with Brian.
Okay. Yeah. I think we have some really interesting characters here. And I also love the way that we have kind of a small ensemble cast that we're reusing actors for different characters. Benedict Cumberbatch is obviously so good as Henry Sugar. I mean, he is the meat and potatoes of this story. Roald Dahl, who is not obviously in the original telling of this story, is played excellent by Ralph Fiennes. I love that we have Dev Patel in there. And Richard Ayoade?
Moss!
Ayoade. I can never remember how to say his name.
What a surprise. And of course...
This is why fucking... I sent it to somebody else first, because I also... I'm like, Ayoade.
Ben fucking Kingsley.
Ben?
The man Ben Kingsley as Imdad Khan. So good. So good. He's amazing. I love him and everything. But that's just me. So I think characters here, we are just, it's a full send. I think it's a 5 for me.
5 from you? Yeah. Ryan, how are you feeling about this? About the characters here in this movie?
Sorry to cut you off. I agree with everything Brian said, so I don't need much to add. I think this is perfectly cast. I also love the dual roles. I love when they pop up in surprising ways. Everybody's perfect here. And you know what? Just for including Richard Ayoade, like, I want to give it points because, like, what an undersung talent. And,
oh, yeah.
Goddamn, his one look of shock and concern as he turns around, worth his inclusion. I love this man.
Mm-hmm. Kyle, what about you?
5 actors, 5 points.
Concise and to the point. There's not much that you can add here. I will say, Brian used a word here that I think when we get to direction, I want to focus a little bit more on. You used the word ensemble, an ensemble cast, and I think there is so much to unpack here when we get into later categories. The vision on this movie was incredible. Not to, I'm going to jump the gun on, you know, my thoughts, but the vision for this short film was incredible. I can't go anything less than a 5 for characters in this movie. I think the only place that you can really even dock it is if you're looking into all of those subcategories that are on here, like antagonist, protagonist, like, is there really needed a spot in a 40-minute movie like this to have antagonist, protagonist? Not really, right? When it's just trying to tell a story.
So, and you have a natural antagonist in Henry Sugar, even though he is the protagonist. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's definitely dealing with his own proclivities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a good point. And it's not until he sees his own mortality that things start to change.
He seeks out a power for selfish reasons. And then through the greater power of human kindness.
Oh my God, it's Doctor Strange again.
He does do the Doctor Strange fingers too. And I was like, practice that.
This, of course, leads us to the next category, which is story. And I will actually start this one off. And actually, I'm going to start this one off. It's not an original story, right? It's based on the Roald Dahl story.
Right.
Of the wonderful story of Henry Sugar.
It is basically a line for line reading of it.
Which I can't wait to talk later categories. Story, motivation, screenplay. I think screenplay, like if I could give it 20 points myself, I would, just because of a lot of what was done with it. I'm just hard stop going to go 5 here and send it reverse order to Kyle.
I'm going to say something in story, and then I'll say the exact same thing in style. On paper, who you would want to direct a Roald Dahl movie would be Tim Burton. In execution, who you want to direct a Roald Dahl movie is Wes Anderson. He nails every aspect of this story. He gets it. He gets the nuance. He gets the subtlety. He presents it in the most fantastical of fashions. And yeah, it's Wes Anderson. That's who you want. We've seen Tim Burton's work with Roald Dahl, and it doesn't work. Five.
Right on. Ryan.
Just to bump off of Kyle, because he said that, I think it's interesting you said Tim Burton's who you would want on paper. And I think you're right, because I think Wes Anderson, especially with what he does here, he's a little bit more not four quadrant friendly. It does hew maybe a little bit more adult. The themes are a little bit more serious. There's a lot less whimsy, and it is just people talking. Like, I don't know that a kid would be entertained by this much at all versus a Tim Burton movie. I think they'd be much more entertained by. That said, for me, I am reading this, not some fucking kid. This is a 5 out of 5 in story. I love how they've represented the written word in this format. I think it's so unique and novel. Kyle, you're right. Goddamn, Wes Anderson is like the perfect fit for Roald Dahl. And like his sensibilities fit this just amazingly. But like, I just can't express enough just like how cool it is to hear Roald Dahl's word just kind of verbatim. They don't have to twist it or adapt it. It is just being spoken. And I think it is so fresh and unique. And I really like, honestly, if Wes Anderson did this for the rest of his career, I'd be happy. I'd be very happy.
That is so spot on. And that, Brian, do you have anything to add to that?
I'm gonna be the one, huh?
Yay! It's not me.
Something about this. The story, as written by Roald Dahl, I enjoy as a written word, as a book. It felt like it was being told to me instead of shown to me. I felt like the whole movie, like I said, is a narration, and you don't get a whole lot of actual interaction on screen, and they're not. I know there are stylistic choices involved, and that it, I don't know how to put into words. I was a little disappointed that we didn't get to do like when they go to the carnival and there's the magician doing the tricks and they just focus on the audience and they read to you like, oh yeah, you did all these wonderful things, and you don't see them. And it's,
did you not find it?
You're not wrong. I can see why somebody would not respond to this.
His lead up to his big trick of threading a needle was throwing a bunch of knives at children and shooting a bottle off of a young boy's head with a revolver, and his piece de resistance was threading a needle.
Threading a needle with a magnifying glass. There's a lot here that I wish I could have seen more of instead of being told what was happening. So I'm only giving it a 3.
This is also, it's cool, it is because
a movie that talks at you.
Well, it is, but it's also, it's funny to see, because Brian's coming into this as, this is like your first official Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
I could see it being jarring where,
second.
But he saw Rushmore. I know. But I'm saying like this, that Rushmore compared to Wes Anderson now, like this is a completely different beast. Different. And that's what I'm saying, is that like Ryan and I have come in through the appreciation of Wes Anderson. So for me, this just hits all the fucking buttons.
Right.
But seeing it from the outside perspective of this, like your first quote unquote real Wes Anderson experience, is pretty interesting, because I could see it being jarring and off-putting.
It would be like watching Clerks and then watching Jay and Silent Bob reboot.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I could see, because it is, but again, like this is like Wes Anderson distilled to a perfect little Wes Anderson tea. I feel.
Yeah.
And
just, yeah. Even more diluted than that transition that Kevin Smith makes.
Yeah, I
it is much more potent here.
The I Wes made Anderson a joke sauce. That that because I haven't seen much Wes Anderson that we were starting me off with a microdose. But yeah, they packed a whole lot of Wes Anderson into that microdose.
It's a macro. You're definitely tripping balls, buddy.
So I think it's, I actually want to...
It's like a drop of hot sauce.
Boom!
Tiny, I think I actually want to break this
but
mold
impactful.
A little bit.
You get a lot of Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
Mold breaker.
Because we're talking about direction, we're talking about director. We're also talking about vision kind of here as well. So I actually want to, instead of putting a pin in that and coming back to it after, I want to go into direction now instead of tone and the other ones. So I want to go into direction because I loved what you just said about that, Brian, and that you felt like you were being told instead of being shown.
Yeah.
And on the... On the other side of that spectrum, I loved that I was being told instead of being shown, if that makes any sense. This entire movie, I felt as though I were watching. At first, I watched this four times, like 3.5 times. So I watched it kind of half paying attention the other day, then at work. Yeah. That's and then I jumped into Ryan's streaming earlier, and then I watched it with Sarah. And each time I watched it, I kept getting things from it. Like the first time, it felt very like you were watching a theater, a theatrical show with with the sets rolling in. You had kind of offset people coming on to change people's clothes. It felt very monologue-y. But then by the last time that I watched it, what I took from this is that it felt as though me watching this movie, especially with the dialogue and the clip that the dialogue was being delivered and the non-variance in tone, it felt as though I were reading the book and what my mind is envisioning when you're reading a book. You know, you don't just read it slowly. You don't read a lot of tone. You're reading it at a fast clip. You're picturing these things really fast and it's transitioning all over the place. And it felt like this movie was presented in a way of you're reading this book and this is what you're seeing. That's how I felt coming out of it. And I thought that was absolutely brilliant. I didn't look that much into it. I don't know if that was actually his vision, but
yeah, no, I agree with you. I feel like it felt more like a storybook with vignettes instead of illustrations instead of being a film.
And I'm not taking away or discounting what you had said. I just thought it was
I agree a
perfect transition to talk about direction in this movie. For me, I mean, with everything I just said, shocker, I'm gonna go with a 5, but I would love to hear more from you guys about how you felt about the direction of this. And I'll start with Ryan on this one. Oh, or Kyle. Start with Kyle on this
one. I was just going to say my joke again. If on paper you would want Tim Burton to direct a Roald Dahl movie, but in execution, you want Wes Anderson to direct a Roald Dahl movie. Again, I don't know. It's just his style, again, is perfectly suited to this. The monologue-y exchanges are... That's Wes Anderson and the way that it's delivered and presented. The stage show allows him to do even more fourth wall breaks. I love when like they're delivering their monologue and then they cut and they like interject. And I said, and then they go back and read it again. It's just the subtle little things, the way that he's playing with this fourth wall and the whole theatrical thing. The fact that the stagehands are another character, but it's wild how you almost even subconsciously just ignore them because yeah, they're there, but you know they're not part of the story. So it's like you don't remember them. They're very blank. We just remember the 5 main characters. Great stuff, man. 5 out of 5.
There's a point that stood out to me where they were first, when you're first introduced to M.Dot and he's talking to the doctors and, you know, you have Chatterjee basically narrating at this point, and he goes, "I can't believe it, Dr. Marshall said." And you have Dr. Marshall turn and goes, "I can't believe it." It was just like so on the nose. It was, oh man. But yeah, Ryan, what are your thoughts?
Well, so direction, I am going to take a quick moment to talk about just Wes Anderson, because I do think he's an interesting director. And I do think the longer he is in the movie making business, the more he is interested in breaking this line between like movie making and like reality and fiction and these other types of things. And he doesn't, man, it feels like ever since the Grand Budapest Hotel.
Grand Budapest was,
it's very feeling
theatrical.
Like he's really breaking kind of like movie norms, and he is just doing something very different. So I think Kyle succinctly said it. Why we are coming to this from a very different point than Brian is because we've seen this weird arc that Wes Anderson has taken, and it is now like he has fully realized himself as like this kind of artsy non-movie person who really takes like these things that break your immersion in kind of a way. And for all the reasons, Brian, you do not gel with some of the choices here. I hate to say it, but like I gel with them so fucking hard. With them so fucking hard. And like that carnival scene's a great example, because like when you said that, immediately I thought of like the magnifying glass coming out and them miming the needle as they said it, and I was like, just what a fucking cool touch. And it's very theatrical. It is very much a minimalist, like we don't have, or you would think in a theatrical production, we don't have the means to do this, so we're just going to do it in a way that the audience can understand real quick in a cheap way.
Right.
And I think that's this weird area that Wes Anderson now lives, and I think it is so condensed. So if you've listened to this rambling shit I've said, and you're like, yes, that is for me, this is going to be up your alley. If you've listened to what I've said, and you're like, oh my God, he is up his ass. What the fuck is he talking about? This is not, like, I just want some funnies. This is not for you. None of this is going to be for you. I would love if you tried it, but it's probably not going to be for you.
It's a Wes Anderson bouillon cube.
Yeah. Oh my God. It is. It really is. And I didn't know this was kind of the route he was going, but now looking at Henry Sugar, it is so very clear. Like, oh, this was your destiny. You were the chosen one to do this shit. And this shit is what I want. And I love this shit, because honestly, you look at anything else and nobody's doing this.
That's true.
This is so fucking unique. This is a 5 for me just for how fresh and unique it is.
Yeah. Brian, where are you at on this?
I agree that it is fresh and unique. I've never really seen anything quite like this. When we first talked about Wes Anderson, I mentioned that I tried to watch the Fabulous Mr. Fox or whatever it's called, and I got maybe half an hour into it and had to turn it off.
That's a doll book too, right?
Yeah, it is.
It is, yeah.
And that was his first foray, I think.
That might be like my top, what in my top three of Wes Anderson.
I might not like Wes Anderson.
You might not.
Yeah. But I can appreciate what he does, and he does it very, very well. There was a lot coming at me in this movie, all very rapidly. And my focus was being pulled in all different directions. And I am a person that cannot deal with that for a long amount of time. 40 minutes, luckily, seems to be about the barrier.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Fair. I know we'll talk more about this in style, but the pacing was very rapid for me. One of my ADHD symptoms is an auditory processing kind of thing. And the rate of this narration and dialogue was so fast, and there was so much happening on screen, like with transitions, that I did not, I had subtitles on and I was missing a lot of what was happening on the screen while trying to keep up with the dialogue. And I don't know, I felt overwhelmed for the majority of it.
It's funny you say that, because like, same. You know, I'm glad I watched it like four times.
Yeah, I think I would need to watch it two or three more times to be able to catch everything.
Every time I watched it, I picked up more that I had missed somehow. Like, yeah. There is a scene in this movie where he is looking at the boot of cards, and as he's looking at it, the two appears in the corners, and then the suits appear in the corners as if he's envisioning the card on the screen. And I did not catch that the first two. And it was when Ryan was showing it, and I was like, dude, that scene was so dope. But at the same time, like, I could watch a 4-hour version of this and know that I'm only retaining 20% of it.
I almost think it would three more times. Benefit being longer. So they could kind of give the narration and dialogue some more space. Slow it down a little bit and spend some time on these scenes where they didn't show things. I think this script could have been a feature length.
Oh.
Oh, I want 4 hours of coke-addled, like...
I want this coke-addled pace. That coke-addled pace is what I want. Oh. That was just like... Shit.
It is.
Yeah, I was snorting this shit, just like, Anderson!
This is how I learned.
This is perfect for me. It's so different. This is fascinating.
Very interesting.
I am also enjoying this.
I respect really cool the man. To hear you I understand say that. What he was doing, and he did it extremely well. Which is why I'm going to give it a 4.
I would be very curious as to how you feel about like One of Wes Anderson's more recent like long features.
Yeah, very curious.
I would
now.
Be very curious.
I've been that's absolutely spoiler alert. My next pick is going to be my favorite Wes Anderson pick for you, Brian. Because
cool,
we'll see where it goes.
Remember when I sent this to you like a month ago, and you're like, "Oh, is this just starting a Wes Anderson thing for me?"
Yeah,
it is, apparently.
Yep.
But no, yeah, it's so cool.
As soon as I saw it, I was like, okay, so the Wes Anderson floodgates are open? Because I'm bringing it next.
That movie makes me a little child again.
Oh, man, I'm excited.
It is so cool as like a crazy ADHD person to see somebody else's perspective because of that and like how they process it.
Yeah.
So it's just like, it's also really cool to hear you talk about that. And how different our experiences were. It's really
cool. Because same, like, I didn't have subtitles at all. I fucking, this movie just connected directly. And I was like, yes, let's fucking go.
Feed me.
I'm following everything. Give me, we're breaking. We're talking to me. All right, we're back here. Oh, we're talking to me again. Yes, I'm paying attention. Uh-huh. Yeah. Thank you, Moss. Oh, man.
This is the kind of shit, like, when I'm at work, I would like to have my headphones on and just have something playing in the background at this clip. It's that energy, that fast energy. And even if I'm only processing half of it, just keep feeding it to me.
Your work day would go by so fast.
So fast, dude. Unfortunately, there's not that much. You could, if you had a Lord of the Rings book that went back by at this clip, I would listen to it. Maybe.
Well, just get the audiobook and play it at like 5x speed.
Yeah.
That's it. That's it. Brian Hackett.
Don't say that. Because then I'm going to be like, this isn't how it's meant to be listened to. Anyways.
See, that's the thing. There's people that like watch YouTube videos at 2.5 speed, and I can't do it because I'm like, I know that's not how it is, and my mind won't let me focus on it that way. And I'm like, I can't do it.
Yeah.
Nope.
I'm like the same way with cooking. I'm like, no, I can't change the small thing. This isn't how it's supposed to be.
So if it's an hour long, I have to watch the hour long. Give me, I have to do it.
Nope.
Can't speed it up.
Oh. The only place I defer is like tutorial videos. I'm like, nope, get me to the point immediately.
Oh, I will skip around. I will skip around in a tutorial video, but I still can't 2.5 it.
please have shortcuts that I can click on to go to exactly where I need. Yes.
Dave normalize is not on this podcast right now, and this would fucking break his heart. There are Akira Kurosawa movies I've watched at 2x speed.
Oh, no. You know that information's going to get back to him somehow.
Somehow.
Not me, guys. This is a podcast. The information's out there now.
Oh, that's great. Kyle, outside of outside of Tim Burton / Wes Anderson, what else you got to add to direction here?
Oh no, you already did me for direction.
That's it. He said what he said.
Oh, yeah. Did you give a number?
Yep,
I said 5.
Oh,
he repeated it, and it was 5 again.
I completely missed that. Brian,
I can do style though.
Okay. You just though style.
All right, so for style, on paper, you would want Tim Burton to direct a Roald Dahl movie, execution, you want Wes Anderson to direct your Roald Dahl movie. Because goddamn, yeah, for real, like beating a dead horse here, that he would show very artistically somehow. But man, the style is fantastic. The theatrical presentation when the Yogi gets up, physically turns his box so that on the perspective it blends into the background, even though you've seen him do it, your brain still falls into the fact because it blends in, like, oh yeah, he's hovering. Like, it's insane how Wes Anderson deliberately shows it to you and then still allows you to suspend your disbelief. Like Ryan was saying, it's this, he's like taking everything and just distilling it, whatever he's done, and just being like, yeah, this is a movie, but you're still going to believe exactly what I'm telling you because that's the magic of film. It's beautiful the way that he just nails it, man.
I feel like even when you also notice that, you're like, damn, that's fucking cool.
It is so cool. I love shit like that. He does it a couple of other times in the movie, and there's just other... I love when like they're just changing Ben Kingsley's hair while he's talking, and they're just pulling the ear hair out. And give mustache. He's like, yeah, the mustache.
The mustache then, bit's very good.
Oh, it's awesome. Just so, and you just, it's so, he's literally like, hey, this is really fake. Aren't we having fun? Come along. Let's go. Mm-hmm. And you just do. And that's the beauty of Wes Anderson. And that's why I do want to show you my favorite, Brian, because I feel it's maybe also the most accessible. Maybe. We'll get there. But yeah.
What is it bit. Out of curiosity?
Moonrise Kingdom.
Moonrise Kingdom. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's cool. Because it's also, I'm a sucker for a love story. My favorite story or my favorite movie is Punch Drunk Love. Moonrise Kingdom is like young first love.
I love love.
Fucking sweet.
And that's why I think it's like it, Brian. That's why I was trying to kind of cage that. But yeah, it's a Wes Anderson love story, man.
Does Wes Anderson have any heist movies?
Yes, kind Bottle of? Rocket, and yeah, it's Bottle fucking Rocket fantastic. It's also so good. Fucking good.
That was before Rushmore.
Yeah.
But it's also
also the least Wes Anderson-y. Mm-hmm. I think, Brian, you would love it. It is so good. Yes. It's character-focused.
Ryan, maybe you should bring Bottle Rocket after I bring Moonrise Kingdom.
Maybe God, I would jerk off to Bottle Rocket for 2 hours.
I mean, it's very indie movie. Like...
It is, but it's so good. It has maybe the best Owen Wilson performance outside of
really good.
It's
both Wilson
fucking
brothers.
Fantastic. It's so fucking good. They're both good, but yeah. Owen Wilson specifically is just like,
and Jason Schwartz.
Goddamn.
Yeah,
it's so good.
No, I'm here to work.
I love it.
Yeah, that's the other great thing about any Wes Anderson movie is that you are getting just the top of top tier people in them. So
yes, usually Bill Murray.
Yeah, who is always crushing
Bill
it.
Murray or Willem Dafoe? You're usually guaranteed.
I mean, Harvey Keitel shows
sign
up
me
a lot.
Up for unlimited Dude. Dafoe. I will buy the full subscription to the Dafoe Pass.
$23 a month. I will even take that with ads.
Yeah.
No,
I want Dafoe plus no ads.
If I didn't say it, 5 for style too.
2?
No, I'm just gonna pin that conversation for later. But I do think it's an interesting question. if there are streaming services, who is an actor you would sign up for John all Hamm. Of their work? Let that that might be like John for Hamm? A yeah, Patreon. John Hamm. Yeah,
easily. Say that.
I love that the Patreon episode.
Guys, we might have to
patreon.com/experiencegrind. That might be upcoming soon.
We might have to revisit sign up the now. Actor subscription for Patreon.
Somebody write that down because I'm going to have forgotten it in 2 minutes.
I already did.
I'm going to have to come up with another actor, though.
I don't even remember.
That's right. You already wasted John Hamm. Damn it.
It's John Hamm's Hamm Club.
The Hamm Club.
John Hamm's Club.
Wow. It's like Sam's Club by Hamm's Club.
It's called Hamon, but with two M's.
Oh, no.
Because guess who's on? Hamm's on.
It's John Hamm.
That's the Spanish network version. Oh my god.
Hamon. It's got the yeah.
That's a stylistic choice, which means Brian, how you feel about the style in this movie?
I mean, this movie's dripping in style. It's almost drowning in style. There's almost decisions made for style at the expense of story.
Some would say.
I'm going 3. No, that feels too harsh because, like, the stylistically, there's no score. There's one piece of music. It's a Mozart song. And I mean, that's not like necessarily a bad thing, but it points off in my book.
You know,
you don't even notice it.
You know, when I watched it again this afternoon, I was like, okay, I got to look out for that one piece of music that I really liked the other day so I can talk about it. And I never once registered music being in it. So I don't know what I thought I heard the other day. Is that a symptom of a stroke? What is happening? Is that toast?
I know music existed, but I can't remember where or when.
Oh man.
Ryan. No, I will give this a 4. I need to punish it somehow. I can't give it a 3 because I understand that there's a reason for the things that were done, but I do feel like story was sacrificed for style in a few situations. So it's a 4.
Not quite a wait until dad gets home, but like go to your room.
Like just think about what you've done.
Sean, can you unpack what happened in your childhood that made you just say that? No, and you can't make me. Ryan, can you save me from me?
You guys go give your 5s.
Yeah, I hate it, but he's right. I'm going to give it a 5. No matter what I say, it's going to be followed up by a 5. He's right, but it worked for me, and it's not going to work for certain people, so I there's not much to say. So I do want to take this time and style to say, like, or highlight, I will say, the set design and just the way the scenes and the sets move and transition in between one another, and just like the amount of time that would take.
Yeah,
you're right.
The vision.
It probably is at the expense of like a more emotional and like impactful story, but I think that deficit is so made up for by the style that it ended up being okay for me. But like again, I can see it is so much more style than substance. But like, god damn that style! I love this style,
and so much
for
style.
Me. It works so hard. So yeah. You're right, 5. It's going to be a 5, but I do want to call it the sets because I do think the sets are particularly just so incredible in this. They're so good.
I agree.
I'll follow that up with, man, the sets. You have ones that look so 2D and cardboardy, like
the jungle.
Jungle. And the gypsy house in the beginning, it just looks like the most low rent theatrical set piece, you know, your local community college thing, you know, having a show, it's there. Then that goes away and it starts getting into three-dimensional kind of set pieces that roll on. to then you cut to hearing about Imdad's story, and he's just on this red and orange background, and the top peels down, and there's just another live action set that's going on above him that somehow then ends with like a tiger walking on and look at, like, so much that's going on in this movie is just, for everything that you maybe feel like is missing in other parts, which I can totally understand. I get it. Like Ryan said, I feel like it more than makes up for it. This is one of the most beautiful movies visually that I've ever seen in my entire life. And it's weird that it's just because of like set piece, set piece, set piece, and how it's just at such a fast pace. This is like, man, I watched Asteroid City, I don't know, when it came out, and I think visually it's a very striking movie, you know, with the tone and the colors and just the blues and the oranges and reds. Beautiful. For everything I didn't like in that movie, this movie so excelled in, and I can't give this, in terms of style, anything less than a 5. Like, it's just absolutely beautiful. The tone. Oh. Yeah, I can't stop gushing about how gorgeous, style-wise, this movie was. Which brings us to our last category, which is entertainment value. I mentioned twice, I think, that I thought this was going to be a movie about magic, but instead, if people have gone to
Burt
the website...
Wonderstone 2.
Burt Wonderstone. If people have gone to the website, experienceguide.com, I think listed under like some of my favorite movies to watch are like casino movies and heist movies are some of my favorite ones. And so this really touched upon like the whole gambling thing and cheating at gambling and stuff, which for when they lost me at it not being about magic, I was immediately pulled back in by this guy being like, oh yeah, I'm going to learn this way to meditate. I'm going to spend 3 years learning to meditate so I can cheat at blackjack. And man,
this guy is speaking to me.
Like, this movie was written for me.
It's relatable.
And then some dude wrote a book about it.
In the 70s.
In the 70s. Crazy.
I did love that little aspect. I just wanted to interject here. That was one of my favorite parts, is that like the character goes into this for such selfish reasons, but because it's such an inner self-reflective process that you go through, that he eventually does change for the better just by focusing on self-reflection. And like, he even makes like the thing that he focuses on his own face because he is so self-absorbed. But even at the end of the day, like, it still changes him on a fundamental level to be a better person, because he realizes that life is beyond these trivial chases. And I thought that was another great little beautiful touch in this fantastic story.
Yeah.
He reaches, and the fact that this is 40 mm-hmm. minutes long, and this is basically, if you're going to strip it all down, this is basically like 5 segments, 5 little mini stories put together to create 1 large story, which means you don't have any more than 6 or 7 minutes devoted to any given thing that happens in this. And in terms of the time that everything's given, the story told from beginning to end, and the fact that if I ever see this playing anywhere, like, I don't think I've ever jumped into a theater thing going on in Experience Grind, but I saw in the Discord, but I saw Ryan in there. I'm like, yep, clicking on that. And for that, it just screams easy 5 from me. I was so thoroughly entertained by this that I would get off of here right now and go watch it again. Ryan. With an R.
All right, so I am very sorry to do this. What are we rating again?
The entertainment value.
Entertainment value.
Okay. As much as I want to give everything a 5, I think this one might drop down for me to a 4, because as much as I love it and see it from a certain way. All right, cool. Kyle's right there with me. I do think Brian brings up a good point. It is a very talk heavy movie that talks at you, the audience. And I think this is absolutely not going to resonate with certain people. And no fault, no shade. I'm not saying like, oh, you're fucking a dumb person for not understanding this art. Just like, it is like, it's a fucking different idiot piece of a movie. It is a lot of talking, and it does not feel like a movie, and this will right. throw people off. And I think that's the intention of this, is to break that wall and present this artifice and really challenge you. And if you don't want that, you're not gonna like that at all. You're gonna have a bad time. You're gonna have a real fucking bad time with this movie. So, I do need it. I need to bump it down. And it is, I think a 4 feels reasonable. I could even maybe go down to 3 possibly, because I do think this is a challenging short. Even for 40 minutes, it is talk heavy. It is a dense 40 minutes. So. I'll go 4. I'll be generous, but like, it could easily be a 3. So if what we've said is already kind of setting your feelers off for like, I'm not gonna like this, it's a 3 or maybe even 2 for you. It's not gonna be your thing.
Yeah. Kyle.
Yeah, I gave up the ghost, but I also went 4, but it's for a different reason from Ryan. I absolutely loved everything about this movie, and I'm really only giving it a 4 because I, with Brian, I would like to see this feature length, man. I don't think there's enough here for me. I would have squeezed even more entertainment out of this, so that's really my only negative against it. I loved it. I wanted absolutely more of it and could have taken more, so just to give it a slight, I'm giving it a 4.
That's a petty okay. point. Because I think some would argue,
how
doesn't
dare
that
you?
Mean you enjoy it so much?
Oh, I enjoyed every fucking second of this movie. I want to go watch it again with Mandy. Well, I probably will. But yeah, just it was great. I fucking loved it.
Nice.
Wes Anderson's in my top 5 for sure. So this was easy. Like, oh yeah, let's fucking go. And I literally didn't know it existed, which is funny to me. And I'm going to go watch the other 3 shorts, too. So
I think it's kind of funny because I don't think, especially after the Asteroid City viewing, I didn't quite know where I stood with Wes Anderson. And honestly, I didn't even know this was a Wes Anderson flick when I sent it to you guys until Brian responded with that. And so I'm a little surprised. Brian, you want to finish this off?
I will finish this off. Like I said, I was stressed out while watching this. there is a certain level of Wes Anderson literacy you have to have going in, I think. And it lends to more appreciation. Or just the knowledge beforehand that what you're watching is not a traditional movie or short film. It is a telling of a story in a different way. That is to say, it's not that I didn't get entertainment out of it. I mean, the story, I think, was good. I enjoyed it looking back. I think I enjoy it more looking back and remembering it than I did while watching it. I had, like, a very real stress response to some of the way it was presented. But, like I said, I still have a certain amount of reverence for how it was done. And I do know that it won the Academy Award for Best Live Action Short Film in the 96th Academy Awards. So I'm going to give it a 2. which I think is pretty generous for something that made me uncomfortable for 40 straight minutes. Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry about that.
Man, I feel like I should do There's Something Off About the Johnsons now.
Oh, man. Oh, please do. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh,
but like,
buddy. Oh, so don't say please do.
Wait, how
don't
long
don't say
it?
Please. It's a
talking
short film.
Talking about stress reactions.
It's about 36, it's 38. Is it even that long?
I feel like that could be
I think
very
it might be 20-something minutes, but
is it
still 20? Feels long.
Oh, buddy. Have either, neither of you guys have seen it?
No.
I've never even heard of it.
It's Ari Aster's first, one of his first shorts, and it's
the horror director?
Depraved.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
It's depraved.
But intentionally so. I don't think this is supposed to make you feel uncomfortable.
No. Again, this is the coolest thing I think we've done with the show, or at least that I've experienced, is somebody coming into Wes Anderson at peak Wes Anderson. Like,
yeah,
it's because again, like Ryan said, it's such an acquired, like, I loved everything about this because of growing with like Wes Anderson films and seeing what he's done. Like, I was instantly hooked, but seeing it from this complete other angle, yeah, so many things click too. Like, oh, okay, so you can't, it is weird. Like, it's like throwing somebody into a prog rock deep into the pool without, like, you know, it's weird to how to break this down to describe. Showing somebody the last season of Lost and being like, "Do you get great? Isn't that awesome?" And you're like, "Wait, why was that happening?"
It's a difficult way to introduce somebody to an auteur.
Yeah,
I do think Wes Anderson's a bit like coffee too, and that is just strong no matter what. I remember, like, my first Wes Anderson movie being Royal Tenenbaums and not getting it at all. And just being like, what the fuck are these people? How are they talking? What is this? And really just not digging it. And it took many Wes Anderson movies to, like, finally get it and kind of, like, see. And not like there's something to get, and if you don't get it, whatever. But, like, I think it is a taste. And if you're able to latch into what he is offering, it's there. But it is so, maybe, and I hate to say it, repellent initially. It is off-putting and jarring intentionally in this weird way. And again, it's how he plays with the artifice. And it's in a way that, like, I think is really repugnant to a lot of the major audiences, which is why he's become like the art auteur indie boy, because he speaks to like very few people. But
he did Midsommar, right?
He's a very acquired taste.
Ari Aster?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Before I forget, have you guys seen Milk and Cereal?
No.
It's on YouTube. It's an hour long. It came out last year. Sarah and I watched it, and like, it ended, and we were both just like, "What the fuck? What the fuck?" So, like, if it's anything like that, I am all on board. But I'm glad that I'm not glad, Brian, that you're like, "This movie stressed me the fuck out." Entertainment it too. But I'm glad that we had someone on here that also, like,
you need a dissenting voice
to exactly give a full picture. And Ryan said so many times, you're either going to be like over the moon about this or not, I think. And
I think the final score we landed at is appropriate for this movie. Yeah. And in line with things like the Rotten Tomatoes, Metacritic, all that.
Oh, wait. Yeah, I did write down my score.
Me too.
So, boys, I asked you prior to this to write down your individual thoughts and scores before we reveal what we came up with for an answer. And Kyle, I'd love to start with you. We'll go Kyle, Brian, and then Ryan.
Yeah. I wrote down 99.
Wow.
And then I drew a robot / skeleton skydiving around it. Yeah, there it is. There it is.
Oh, that looks fire.
Tantric kunking?
I was going to make a joke that the yogi taught me tantric cranking. Tantric. And then I was going to say, "Oh wait, did I say tantric? I meant frantic." But then I didn't find time to put that joke in there. But I'm glad you brought it up, so thanks, buddy.
There it is. You know, I would probably have Danny Elfman score your frantic. Never. Brian?
I knew that I was not going to be giving this high scores, but I know that there was a certain level of respect I had for the work. I gave this a 72.
Ooh. Okay. I feel like that's a super fair score. I feel like that's high for...
Mm-hmm. I really do feel that's high, too, for what you ended up with.
But also, seems pretty fair. Ryan, where did you come in?
So, you're not going to see a physical product from me because I actually wrote on a sticky note on Windows. But it's a 94. I love this. I really respond to this. But I kind of anticipated a response from Brian like that, because this movie is very specific. It is not accessible. It is not the Wes Anderson I'd recommend to people to get into. It's a bit much. And for me, it's what I want. But yeah, it's a bit much.
It's definitely advanced Wes Anderson.
Kind of. It's not. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. So 94, I think, is about where I would do.
Mm-hmm. Nice. With that, Brian, can you reveal what all of our scores added up to?
That's going to be a 91.
Okay.
All right.
Which is pretty in line.
Yeah.
All right. That feels about right where it's supposed to be. If we're looking at Rotten Tomatoes, it's pretty much a little bit higher than splitting the difference between critical and audience. And
Who was higher, the critics or the audience on this one?
Critic is 95 and audience is 81.
Yeah. Audience obviously a little higher than I thought.
The audience was.
Yeah, but also I feel for the most part you're only watching this if you are a Wes Anderson fan. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
and like the Letterboxd average score is a 3.8, so it's also right in line with that, lower than the Rotten Tomatoes audience.
And same with IMDb, 7.4 out of 10. Like, that's about where, like, a 74 is about where I would have imagined it being pegged. But boys, I'm so glad that you guys joined me in this. I'm glad that I got to watch a Wes Anderson that I really came out of enjoying personally, and I'm able to have this outlet. I'm glad that it was a smooth 39 minutes that I then watched four times. So fuck me, I guess.
I feel if I watch it again, it'll be more palatable.
Yeah, probably. You don't have to pay attention to the stuff that you registered last time, and you can just pay attention to the new stuff.
Just build on the knowledge I have.
Exactly. Every time. It's repeat viewing absolutely benefits us.
It's like watching Arrested Development for the second, third, fourth time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. I highly recommend literally everybody doing that. Anyways,
once you finish
Arrested Development, start it again. Oh, especially season four before they fucked it up. Anyways, Brian, that leads us to you, who is next week. What do you have in store for us?
Well, I wanted to do something different.
Ooh. Have you guys heard of Wes Anderson?
Have you guys heard of this guy? We've talked about movies a lot. We've talked about some music. We've talked about some video games. I have another thing. I want everybody to come next week with their top three brand loyalties. Learn a little bit about us and the products we consume and or locations we like to frequent, whether they're stores or entertainment, like things like that.
Really wide open.
Very wide open. Bring three and maybe bring a fourth for Patreon.
I love it. I love it. I love it. That was my
I'm going to be Kyle next week. I think I've got mine. I'm gonna pull from the hip. I think I've got it.
That's how I felt when I came up with it. I was like, I think I'm prepared already.
I've already written down two, and
I definitely have two.
Nice.
I have two off the rip. I feel like if there's any like software developers out there, they're actively just through our shows creating perfect replicants of us. Yeah. They're like, oh, okay, these are their songs. These are their loyalties. These are their personalities.
Oh yeah, we're definitely building a profile of how easily to
advertise to us. How can the algorithm know me if I don't know myself?
Well, these deep dives aren't helping here. Because every time I feel like I'm learning more about myself, that means that everybody else is too. Fuck.
Just trying to make it easier to shop for you boys.
Oh, that's a great way of thinking about it. Shit. Damn. Listeners, as always, I want to thank you for making it this far into the episode. And if you've enjoyed everything that you like here, let me tell you. Come by and join us on Friday, where we put out a bonus episode on Patreon. We're going to go straight from here into recording one that will come out then. And if you head over to patreon.com/experiencegrind, for as little as a dollar, you can get access to that and all prior episodes. And listen, if you want more than just, you know, listening to us, you want to come chat, you want to join in on some bracket madness. Right now it's March. So obviously we're doing a bracket on expositionary songs from movies. Team America.
Great pick from Paul.
Come and join in on that. Talk about food porn. I don't know. Look at doggos and cattos. Sounds like an awful cereal. But Discord link is going to be in the show notes below. As always, thank you for joining us. And until next week, go stare into the blackness of a candle, because that is the emptiness of everything.